Hello, friends. I am Cindy Thompson, and this is a Resilience Project. This is a space where stories are shared and possibilities are discovered. I invite you to partner with me in cultivating resilience among humans, one conversation at a time. In this episode, we are talking about challenging ourselves to get out of our comfort zone. Many of us have a natural discomfort or aversion to change, whether it is creating new routines, a new job, or a transition in our lives, we feel the discomfort associated with change. As we navigate new experiences, our bodies will feel uncomfortable, and it takes time to adapt. I can't imagine what immigrants might go through in completely uprooting their families, leaving extended family as well as the comfort of their culture, or learning to communicate in a new language. Every day, there are individuals and families of various cultures that are willing to take the courageous leap of faith. My guest today has been studying under the Adler School of Psychology. This is a field of psychology that emphasizes the benefit of community and understanding the value of belonging and social interest. As we dive into the importance of mutual respect and learning how to live together, learn together, and work together in cooperation, we are identifying some of the key ingredients necessary for mental health. Intergenerational resilience is also a topic that I'm excited to expand on in this conversation. To help me do this, I am honored to welcome my guest, Sarah, or Shagaya Saidi. She has given me permission to refer to her as Sarah, as this is the name she adopted when she moved to Canada. As a doctoral student of psychology and a first-generation immigrant to Canada, Sarah brings a wealth of personal and professional insight to this conversation on multiculturalism and resilience. Residing in Coquitlam, British Columbia, and working as a mental health clinician at the Chilliwack Youth Health Center, it is my privilege to have this insightful young woman here as my guest. Here is my conversation with Sarah. Sarah, I so appreciate your taking some time out of your day to meet with me and be on a Resilience Project.
I'm so excited. I feel so honored that you chose me to participate.
Well, you have an amazing story, and we as humans all go through varying degrees of adversity, of challenges in life, and I love hearing what people have experienced, what they've gone through, and how they got through it. And to me, that's an important theme here of what we're talking about when we talk about resilience, is how do we navigate those challenges and share that with others so we can learn from each other?
Yeah, I mean, for me, a big part of resilience is the social piece and social connection. And I think you'll hear in part of my story, it's really about a feeling of togetherness and helping each other go through the journey of life and being each other's support and source of resilience.
Yeah, such an important piece. And we're going to apply it to your lived experience as your family immigrated from Iran. You're currently studying psychology and becoming a psychologist. So it's really exciting to tap into your wisdom, what you've been learning, and what that means for resilience as well.
I'm excited to share.
Yeah, thank you. Let's talk about what resilience has meant for you, Sarah.
Resilience for me has been adaptability and persistence. In my life, I've gone through many, many, many different changes, some good, some really scary, and some changes which have kicked me and my family to the ground, and we've had to pull ourselves up, and persistence is key. So something that has been ingrained with me from when I was a child is that when you fall, you get up and you keep going. You keep pushing forward. And resilience really means persistence and adaptability.
Absolutely. And sometimes it isn't until we look back that we realize what we were capable of in those moments. Can you bridge that for the listeners, Sarah, and share some of your family story to help the listeners understand what your family experienced as they immigrated from Iran? And I understand you were about 6 years old at the time.
I was, yeah. to be able to understand my story and the story of the thousands of other immigrants in Canada, first you have to understand the milieu of the times and the geographic location that we come from. So I'm Iranian. We're also called Persians, and I immigrated from a country called Iran. Iran is a really lovely country filled with warm, loving people, but it's gone through a lot in the past, let's say 50 years. My family was born and raised in Iran, and my parents were actually the first ones in their big group of siblings to go to higher education. So my grandpa was a watermelon farmer, and I wish I had his green thumb, but I don't. It's hard to keep plants alive. So my parents went on to university, which was something that was kind of breaking the generational traditions, especially for women staying at home, having six or seven children, right? So my mom moved out when she was 16 and she went to a dorm in the capital city and she studied mathematics and computer sciences, and computers were brand new at the time. That was my family then. And my parents were really like thriving and putting themselves through school. They came from humble backgrounds, but they made something of themselves. And then 1979, here are these two teenagers who met at university, and the revolution happens. The revolution was a religious revolution, and it changed the whole landscape. So we're coming from a place where my family is breaking these generational traditions and kind of moving into like a more modern, educated life that they've created for themselves. And it feels like after the revolution, they've been set back 100 years. So my mom could no longer sit with her male classmates in class. The women had to sit at the back of the class, had to sit at the back of the bus, and suddenly they had to be covered up. And they had to be careful, like what they say. There's the morality police watching every move that you make. So that was a real struggle for them. And a lot of people died, and it was a really messy revolution. And of course, my parents knew political students. Students were very political in that time, and some of them were executed. And my mom's roommate was actually executed, and she was a med student. So it's just heartbreaking hearing these stories of these women who are trying to like break these traditions and move ahead, and something structural happens and it stops them.
Yeah. And just when you're growing your confidence, finding your voice, it would be very, very difficult, like for any of us today, to have that kind of oppression and have to go back so far from where they had already come.
Yeah, it's like you fall, but you get back up. And that's the part of resilience. So they got back up and they put on the face of religion that you have to show the world in order to get ahead. And what they did is they finished school and they got married. And after a couple of years, my mom got pregnant. And during that time, there was an 8-year war between Iran and Iraq. The war was a really big thing in and of itself. There were no clear winners at the end. It was just for power and money and oil and greed. And thousands of people died on both sides. But on an individual level, my mom would tell me, like they would sound the sirens and then we had to turn all the lights off and we had to go down to the basement to hide. And the closest thing I think for us in Canada, it's an earthquake drill at school.
Right.
But even that comes with a warning. So this is 8 years of living on the edge. And if you think about the human body, the cortisol and the stress hormones that are running through, and towards the end of the war, here's my mom pregnant with all this stress and turning off the lights and running down to the basement. And, you know, you might get bombed.
Right.
You never know.
Well, and I'm imagining with the information we have today, that stress that she would have been experiencing was also being experienced by yourself, because you're the little baby that was inside her as she was going through that level of stress.
Yeah, so a lot of research has come out on intergenerational trauma. We hear a lot about this word, especially in Indigenous communities with all the hardships that they had to go through. So Indigenous communities, and I think members of BIPOC in general, were thinking of immigrants coming. And right now, I know that, you know, a few months ago, Afghanistan was really portrayed on the news. And there was this image that was so horrifying for me to watch. It was that baby being handed up to the soldier to be taken over the fence. But that just shows people's hopes that even if they can't make it, their children will have a better life. And I think for my parents, that was one of the decisions to come. But my mom had her family, so she was pregnant. So she had my aunts to help her. She had that really big family support. Mm-hmm. And when we came to Canada, that didn't exist anymore.
Exactly.
It takes a village to raise a child. That's really the mentality, and suddenly transitioning over and not having anyone.
That's a really great point, because that's an extreme situation where they really had to decide that they needed to leave in order to have a healthier life and to give a life for you and for their family now. But to leave that close network behind would have taken a lot of courage.
Yeah, I really don't know if I would have made the same decision that my mom made, especially being a woman. And for me, going through and trying to finish my doctorate, I know how hard it is and how much dedication it takes. And for her at that time to finish a mathematics degree and a computer sciences degree and to have a job and to be a professional in the field. And one day, you know, I'm going to have to give all this up for my children. And that's eventually what she did. So when my parents immigrated over, I was 6. And my mom, she was pregnant again with my brother. So my parents made the decision that my mom would stay at home and take care of the kids. And my dad would go on. He was really lucky to get a job in his field. And he worked there for 25 years. But my mom, she had to give up her career. And that's such a big part of someone's identity.
Yeah, absolutely. I can imagine just the sacrifices that would have needed to happen on so many levels. Would you bridge for us, Sarah, what it was like once your family had moved to Canada and some of the challenges they would have then undergone to try to make a go of it without the family support they left behind?
So here are these two young 30-something adults who've just left everything behind. They have 3 suitcases with them and they have a little daughter, me. Level of English is what they've learned at school. So I like to compare that with what you learn and what you know in maybe middle school French. How many of us would be able to survive in a different country with that language? And it was incredibly difficult. You have to think about now, where am I going to live? I've saved a little bit of money. I can rent an apartment for a little bit of time, but then I have to get a job and there's food and there's diapers and there's a new baby being born. So at that time, my parents were incredibly lucky because Canada had the skills worker program for immigration. So because they were both programmers and Canada needed programmers at that time, they were able to immigrate. But I know that so many others weren't able to do that. They just didn't have the opportunities that my parents did. And a lot of people became refugees. But at the end of the day, like, we're cut from the same fabric, refugee, immigrant, we're all the same. You know, part of this is having compassion for other people, and really social resilience is important. So resilience on an individual level, but more as a group of people coming together.
Yeah. So when you put yourself in a new environment, a new culture, new language, and you're looking after your small children, there's a lot of adaptation. There's a lot of bouncing back that involves a lot of resilience. So when you were growing up as a younger child, Sarah, you had mentioned to me that you also had to help them with the language. Perhaps you were going to school now, learning English, much more fluent in English, needing to help your parents.
Yeah, so we have to kind of remind ourselves that here I am, like a 6 or 7 year old, and suddenly I know more than my parents in terms of language. So I have to help them with government forms and talking to people and advocating for them, like customer service phone calls, like, oh, can you talk to my daughter, right? Like, I don't understand what's going on. And here's like a 7 or 8 year old being parentified in that way. Like, I don't blame my parents at all, because this is just part of the experience of being an immigrant and being the eldest child that I think a lot of people will be able to resonate with. Mm-hmm. But it definitely, I think, made me grow up at a faster rate. Like, I knew these different governmental programs and things that my friends on the playground had no idea about.
Yeah.
It was a switch. It was a switch of roles. So here it was, like, my parents took care of everything and I didn't really know I was a child in my country. And when I came here, I had to really grow up quickly in order to be able to advocate for my family. And that's the role that I took pride in. Like, I felt really, really happy when I was able to provide that support.
That's really an interesting point, because a lot of parents will worry that they're giving their children too much or they protect them. And yet you can hear the sense of pride, the sense of family involvement, being needed, having a role, an important role in the family, what that brought for you.
Yeah, and I think that talking about resilience, that just that ability to switch and to adapt into this role really helped me, because I was exposed to adversity at such a young age that now when things get really difficult, it's easier for me because I've flexed those resilient muscles. I know how to adapt to take charge. So it's actually like a gift that my parents gave me for me to be able to be independent and really stick out for myself.
I think that in itself is a beautiful message of hope and encouragement for parents as they're providing opportunities for their children and not worrying so much about them, but knowing that they're going to be okay. This might be hard right now, but you're actually helping them build some abilities, some strengths, and that muscle. So do you have much of a memory, Sarah, of coming to Canada and what that was like leaving Iran behind and moving here?
Yeah, so a lot of people ask me if I remember Iran. I'm really sad to say that I don't remember the city. I know that Tehran is beautiful. It's a metropolitan city. What I do remember is my family. I remember my aunts and my cousins and just this warm feeling of being surrounded by love. And I think that one of the hardest things for me coming here was it was suddenly just me and my parents. I didn't have that big community of family that I had back in my country.
Yeah.
I remember on the airplane, I remember we had a transfer in Frankfurt in Germany. And this is like such a beautiful memory. As an artist, and he was drawing a bunny, and I thought it was so cute, and the bunny was playing a flute, and I think he was a German person at the airport. Of course, I don't speak any English or German or whatever, it's just Farsi, and just that human connection, like he understood that I was admiring his work, and he gave me this painting, and I still have it. I've kept it safe for all these years. That is my fondest memory of the transition over. I know that that moment must have been super, super difficult for my family, just to witness taking me away from the social connection. And for that artist, just to give me that piece of work. And it's so validating and empathetic. And it must have made my parents feel like welcome to the Western world a little bit too. Mm.
That's so sweet. All of these examples are reminding us about connection, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you said, your parents had been through so much. They were moving to Canada. I wonder what they then taught you. You've referred to some of the messaging that you would have received as a child, but can you speak more to that?
Intergenerational resilience is something that I talk about a lot in my work as a counselor. And we hear intergenerational trauma, right? We hear adversity. Yes, people have been through intergenerational trauma, But if they're still alive and they've made it to the other side, then there's some skills. There's some skills that have been learned through that trauma. And part of those skills, I think, for immigrants and for families is the skill of coping with adversity, of adapting quickly to a new situation and transforming. So transforming for us would be, so here we are, we're starting new, we're renting a place that's very small in Coquitlam.
Mm-hmm.
Like my mom, she no longer has a job. She's taking care of the children and my dad is going to work. But what they're saying is we want better for our children. So they instilled these traits of if something hard happens, you cope with it.
Mm-hmm.
You got to go and finish what you start. You adapt to change. So you take on new roles. For me, it was you're no longer the 6 or 7 year old naive child. You have bigger responsibilities to cope with and to adapt with. You welcome new change and you adapt and you shapeshift to meet those new goals and then you transform. So for immigrants, I think a lot of people coming from Iran, the Middle East, and from Asia, transformation is through education. So education is power. So you go to school, you do well, you get good marks, and you make something of yourself. This is the path. So we don't have money saved up or inheritance or anything in this country, but you can really, with your education and with your brain, you can make something of yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well said.
Do well at school is the,
that's the message.
Is the message that I heard. Yeah. And that's why I'm still in school.
That's why you're still in school, which is a good thing because I think you're going to have a lot to offer. Were there some subcategories to that, Sarah? It's one thing to say, I want you to work hard. It's one thing to say, we stick to what we start. Were there other skills within that that you think you also acquired that helped you to work through it? Many of us can remember our parents saying, just pull up your socks and carry on.
Yeah.
But sometimes we need more.
Yeah, I think it was modeled to me as well. It's like, if something devastating happens, like my mom, a few months after moving here, her mom passed away.
Mm.
But she had to cope with those feelings. And in a way, we compartmentalize parts of ourselves, especially in my culture, right? That's like mental health. There's a stigma around it because there's no time for feelings or moping or grieving. And sometimes that's a bad thing.
Yes.
But there's a skill in that. If you're able to balance that with not letting it destroy your life and moving forward. So for my mom, she had these feelings. And unfortunately, like she had to do a lot of the grieving alone, mm-hmm. just with my father and us as a support. But she was able to get up the next day and cook us food. She didn't just stay in bed all day. So a lot of like behavioral activation things. So even if you're feeling sad inside, you keep moving forward and that'll kind of help you get reacquainted with living, right? Because living, there's always going to be bad things that happen, but it's what you do with it that counts.
I kind of like that framework, getting reacquainted with living.
Yeah.
Lovely message, isn't it? And that it's okay to grieve, but it's okay to also find a way to get up and at least do small things where you can. So, Sarah, I would be curious, what made you choose the Adlerian studies and whether or not that ties to your personal experience of having immigrated as a family?
Yes, there was for sure. I always say like, I didn't choose Adlerian studies. Adlerian studies chose me. It's the namesake of my school, but we had a few Adlerian courses. And I think the moment that I became really sold on Adlerian theory is this big German word called Gemeinschaftsgefühl.
Oh my.
Yeah, it's a very difficult word, but it loosely translates to social interest and this idea of going forward together as a community. So a really communal feeling. For me, I come from a very collectivistic culture, right? And I was implanted into this individualistic place where you do your work and you get ahead, but it's all about you. The focus is on you doing everything. Mm-hmm. I think part of resilience and part of the immigrant experience is this idea of social resilience, is this idea of coming together as a group. So finding places in your community where you fit, whether that's in sports or different activities. I know for me, it was in debate club or in Model UN or in student council. Like, I just love being surrounded by people, and it gives me a lot of power. And that's what Adler believed in too, is that communities and just humans as a soul, as a totality, we have more power when we work together versus against each other. This idea of Adler's all about social interest and Gemeinschaftsgefühl, and there's pathologies when we're not able to connect with people, that really resonated with me, because I saw even in my parents' experience in our country, when there was an ability to connect with our community, with family, with friends, the resilience was strong. They were able to get through the war together. They were able to get through the revolution. And then when they moved here and they were suddenly alone, right? That's when a lot of immigrants become depressed because they don't have that family connection. So really that root of pathology coming from this inability to connect with people really resonated for me.
Yeah, I love how you laid that out. How could we as a society help one another and have more compassion for immigrants then?
Yeah. So I always say that the opposite of racism is connection. That's really what I believe. So I think that people fear what they don't know. So you hear immigrants or people who are from different backgrounds or even orientation, different abilities, different skin colors, languages, religion, because we don't know it, we're scared of it, right? And that's just human nature, because even evolutionarily speaking, if you didn't know what was in a cave, you wouldn't go in there because somebody or something or a creature could be out to hurt you. But in this day and age, it's really about exposing ourselves to people and things that are very different. So part of why I wanted to do this podcast was through exposure, to say, like, here I am. Hi, I'm Sarah. I'm an immigrant. I moved here when I was 6 years old. I didn't speak English. I came from a completely different culture. I had different food that I brought into school that was maybe weird for the other kids. But I think as we're speaking, Cindy, and for people who are listening, maybe we can see that we have more in common than we have that is different. Mm-hmm. And I just want to tell everybody that all the other immigrants who come here, we're coming here because we believe that Canada is a place of community and of safety and a place where we and our children can do better. And we don't want to harm the country. We want to help Canada grow. I saw that Canada is one of the top educated countries in the world. I think it was only behind Korea.
Wow.
And part of that is immigrants who are coming here are very highly educated, and immigrants push their children to get an education because education is the social capital that will help their children be able to like afford a house or to have a career and raise families of their own. We're more alike than we are different is the message that I want to get across.
Yeah, thank you for that. And it makes me think, Sarah, about how we often as human beings are afraid of change. We're afraid of what we don't know and to take risks. Some have a greater threshold for that than others. But if we embrace change, if we take the time to get to know what it could involve, what it might be about, whether I'm coaching or whether I'm working with somebody in counseling, it gives a beautiful opportunity to explore what that could bring to that person. And what you're speaking about is all the change that your family already went through to get here. And if we, anywhere in this world, really are curious to take the time to get to know that person, take the time to be in conversation and to understand their story, I think people will be pleasantly surprised by the amazing resilience, the work ethic, the desire to be connected. And who knows, you might make a new friend.
Exactly. Yeah. And what you just said is adaptability to change. I know that during COVID, many of us had to adapt to change to a virtual country because everything is new. So you're kind of like a digital immigrant. So your stories of change and resilience can be shared. If you're scared of something, maybe it's like a little bit outside your window of tolerance. That's the growth zone. That's what we call in psychology, the growth zone. So window of tolerance, the safety zone where everything is the status quo. But if you step outside into the growth zone and you go say hi to somebody who's maybe triggering some feelings of uncertainty or anxiety in you, and you get a response back, you get like a hi or a smile, then your brain combines those two things and says, hey, like this person who looks different is not scary. They're not going to hurt me. They just smiled at me. And maybe you have a coffee date or you have a new friend to go shopping with.
Yeah. And to help one another.
Yes.
Like you said, are often very individualistic and looking after ourselves. And yet, if we look out beyond that and remain curious and be open to those possibilities, I think that gives a beautiful opportunity for us to grow. I look at it like an invitation. I can think of so many examples over my years in this field where I have been surprised by people, where even I, sitting in conversation, you know, because we're talking about some of the hardest parts of someone's life, when you dig deeper, very frequently, there is an amazing story of adventure, of courage. And I'd think, gosh, in meeting this person today, I never would have guessed they would have been willing to do that. So let's remember who you were there and how could you be applying that today? I love being surprised by people. And that's my hope, is that more and more people will take the time to have a conversation. And even if the language isn't easy,
you don't have to sit down and talk with somebody. You can do an activity together. Sometimes I see kids on the soccer field and little kids join in or older people join in and they play together. And there's people who normally wouldn't have sat down and have a face-to-face conversation. But that just that ability to do an activity in connection, I think, is so important. And it shows that connection really goes beyond language. Adler always says that empathy is about looking with the eyes of another, hearing with the ears of another, and feeling with the heart of another. So sometimes you don't need words. You just have to be with a person and connect. And it really doesn't matter if that person is vastly different in appearance or origin from you. We're all humans at the core of it.
And it's good for us to remember that.
Yeah.
So Sarah, before we get on to your resilience practice, is there anything else about the connection between immigration, differences, and resilience that you were hoping to share?
I think that sometimes we believe that resilience is a static thing. So you're either resilient or you're not. But resilience is like a muscle. It's a dynamic process. You're always adapting. You're always changing. And just because something is really tough and you weren't able to get over it in the moment, it doesn't mean that you can't continue and flex those muscles. So for a lot of immigrants, it's not being able to get a job in their field. But then what they do is they adapt. So we had a lot of friends who were programmers along with my parents, but they weren't able to get a job in the programming field. So they had to go to like entry level jobs. And that was really about adaptabilities, being able to take opportunities as they come and not be so picky and choosy. and have a bigger picture in mind. So what's your big goal? If your big goal is in supporting your family and you're being offered an entry-level job, is this goal moving you towards supporting your family, or is it moving away? If it's moving towards, then you take it and you make the best of it.
Yeah, that's not something we've really talked about on this podcast. So I'm really glad that you're bringing up some of these very innate ways that when we need to, we really can do things. We can adapt. We can explore what we can do in the moment, focus on what we have control over. And that would be accepting a job, even if it's not our ideal right now, but to see it as maybe a stepping stone.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Saying yes to opportunities.
Yeah, love that. So anything else?
Something else that I want to talk about is this ability to transform trauma. I think that it's really important. There is a brilliant speaker. She's an African woman on TEDx, and her name is Tabitha Mapira. But she talks about how trauma and adversity are like batons that are handed through people in generations. So for example, my grandparents handed a baton of adversity to my parents to make a better life for themselves. And then my parents went to higher education, but then they had this trauma of the war and revolution. That intergenerational trauma was passed on to me. That's the baton I got. And if I want future generations to not have to deal with the stressors or the impacts of that trauma, what I can do is instead of passing on that baton, I can transform it, right? I can do something with it. And what I chose to do is to go to school and to choose this path of psychology a little bit in order to understand myself as well. I think we're all a little bit guilty of that. If we're drawn to psychology, it's understanding ourselves and our family and our community, and also giving back. So when I'm around people, when I have clients that I work with or youth that I work with, we process things together. And for me, being part of a community that my parents weren't lucky enough to have when they just moved here, it's me transforming that trauma instead of passing on the baton. For me, that's part of resilience as well, the ability to adapt, but to transform.
I like that framework. Yeah, I like the picture of that. Yeah. I love metaphors. So thank you for sharing that with us. So Sarah, you are a wealth of knowledge, and I can hear how you have been almost coming full circle in a way from advocating for your parents at 6 or 7, that development that's happened where you are now advocating for people who are immigrants, you're advocating for community, but also helping us understand how we could be doing it better.
For me, a part of growing up here was assimilating. That's how I thought that I had to be in order to be Canadian. I didn't feel Canadian enough because I was different. I looked different. I spoke with an accent and I didn't know how to speak English. So I tried to make myself Canadian. I tried to have a lot of Western people who were third generation Canadians and they celebrated Thanksgiving or Christmas or whatever. And I tried to ignore that part of myself. But now, as I'm studying psychology and I'm understanding this Adlerian way of connection, I'm being reacquainted with my culture a little bit. It's like you lose your lover for so many years and you're being reacquainted and you're remembering how wonderful it was. So my first name is actually not Sarah. So my legal name is Shagayev. It's a Persian name. And when I moved here, nobody could say that. And classmates kind of made fun of it because it was so long. It's 10 letters. And what's the "g"? We can't do that. What is that word, right? Right now it's funny, but at the time, kids can be cruel.
I bet.
So I've always had this dual. There's the Shaver in me who's very collectivistic, who's Persian, whose identity speaks Farsi. And then there's the Sarah who speaks English and goes to school and does all these things. And they've always been like two different people. But now it's kind of, as you said, coming full circle that I'm integrating the both. Even in my emails that I send, I have Shagayer and then I have Sarah Saidi. So it's been integrated. And that's part of the immigration process I find is if people assimilate, they lose all the wonderful things that their culture has taught them, that resilience, that adaptability, that skill to be knowledgeable. And what happens is if you integrate, so instead of having these two parts, you bring them together and you integrate the East and the West, the individualistic and the collectivistic, you'll be able to have many more skills in your tool set and be able to touch many more people in terms of their soul. So for me, it's been a journey. I don't think I'm quite there yet, but I'm trying to integrate these pieces. So for my thesis, I decided to do culturally competent assessments. And I chose the Iranian population to try it on because there isn't that much research being done with the Iranian diaspora. So that's my attempt at integration.
Yeah. Just as you spoke about that, I was picturing you losing a part of yourself. And I'm so glad that you're really taking the time to honor and remember and get back in touch with that part of you. We want to feel whole. And that is a big part of who you are and in your family. And we don't want to dismiss that. I would not wish for anyone to feel like they had to give up a part of themselves in order to fit in, but to bring that whole person to each experience and help us understand about those parts of who you are.
I think for the people who are listening, just previously to when we started this Zoom session, Cindy, you asked me like, how do you pronounce your last name, right? And I want to encourage people, don't be scared to do that, right? If you see like a really long name and you don't know how to say it, instead of ignoring it, ask the person, right? You might learn like a cool new word, and calling someone by their name in the way that their name is meant to be is so beautiful. It's just such a piece of connection. It's saying like, hey, I see you and you're worthy enough for me to learn how to say your name. So if there's something that somebody takes away from this podcast is, you know, a quick homework. If you see a name that you don't know how to say, ask, right?
Yeah, a great reminder. Yeah, thank you. So as we wrap up, Sarah, I wanted to check to see if there are some specific resilience practices that you now apply in your life today that you think we could share with the listeners.
For me, it's reminding myself that things can be hard. And when you're down, it's okay to say, this sucks. This is horrible. I hate this. I'm feeling really sad right now. And to leave a moment for yourself to grieve and really feel your feelings. What I find really helpful for me is writing things down, writing down how I'm feeling so that those emotions are still there. I'm honoring them. But what I do is like, I close the notebook, I leave it somewhere where I know that it's there, but I also continue my day. So that's being reacquainted with living. So I get up and I go to school and I go to work or I do things. It's not ignoring that part of myself because it's there. It's just creating a little bit of separation. And then when I have time, I'll come back to that notebook and I'll write down more feelings or thoughts and I'll put it away again. Instead of a physical notebook, it's on my notes app on my phone, which sometimes it's like, it's always there. So I'll have to like put it kind of on a different screen or something. Mm-hmm. But it's really behavioral activation is what we say in the world of psychology. So it's doing things that are hard that you don't want to do. Honoring your emotions, knowing that you're there, but also understanding that you are not your feelings and that you have the ability to adapt. and reminding myself that I've done it in the past. So the adversity will change, but my behavior and my ability to transform, to cope, to adapt, and these are all resilience, I still have that. That's an innate part of me. And I can go on with my day.
Yeah, great advice. Well, I thank you for being here today, Sarah. I am so glad you get to be the voice of many to help so many people in the years to come in your career. I have no doubt you're going to make a significant difference in the field of psychology, one person at a time.
Thank you so much. It's been so lovely speaking to you and just having this conversation. And I hope that people listening will be a little more able to go out there and to experience difficult and hard things and to say hi to strangers who look different than you.
Yeah, we should make that a challenge, yeah. A call to action.
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah.
Well, thank you again, Sarah, and I look forward to further conversations with you down the road.
Thank you so much. It's been great.
My pleasure. Sarah has given us a lot to think about throughout our conversation. I found myself reflecting on the fact that unless we sit down and have a conversation with someone, we cannot possibly know their story. How many times over the course of a day do we make assumptions about others without bothering to ask? I'm so glad that we have an opportunity to learn from Sarah's personal and learned experience, knowing it is a gift that she is sharing her story with us. Sarah has a beautiful way of explaining the transformation that occurs for immigrants as they learn to adapt and embrace some of the new cultural influences. By integrating both the individualistic and collectivistic parts together, a person ensures that they hold on to the important elements of family and culture. Often these are customs, traditions, and religious beliefs that are the fabric that weaves community together. Identifying intergenerational resilience, you can hear the many ways in which Sarah took on the important role in her family. Despite her young age, she was able to sometimes translate and communicate for her parents when needed. As individuals and as a family, they all had to shapeshift and take on new roles while remaining committed to their larger goal. Here are just some of the highlights and resilience practices shared by Sarah in this conversation. To see resilience through social connection, that together we can help one another weather the storms and find a sense of belonging. Also, a key message from Sarah's parents clearly suggested that when you fall, you get up and you keep going. You can hear the message that they wanted to pass along to their children. While recognizing the difficulty that they might be experiencing in the moment, there is an emphasis on getting reacquainted with living. I love that. Take time to honor what has happened, but do not allow this event to stop you from moving forward. Sarah also reminded us that social resilience invites us to consider how much easier it is when we face challenges as a community or a group. As immigrants, for example, one way that they have learned to adapt is to get involved, to find something that they can join or enjoy with others. For Sarah, this was joining a sports team or doing something that she loved with others. This holds true for anyone moving to a new community, for example. Look for opportunities to get involved in something that you are interested in that you can do with others. In addition, you are invited to step into the growth zone. Remain open to meeting new people even if you do not speak the same language. This provides an opportunity to connect and learn from one another. As you embrace and welcome your differences, you are not only helping others to feel welcome or connected, but you're also able to grow your resilience muscle. Say yes to opportunities. Even small steps towards your larger goals is progress. Take action in the direction of your dreams, even if it does not look like your ideal opportunity yet. Feel your feelings. In naming and honoring what you are feeling, you will be able to be much more attuned to what you need. Next is to write it down. In doing so, you can validate and understand what is important to you, and as a result, have a greater ability to move on with your day. Sometimes the value comes in recognizing what is important to you about this event and how it is impacting you. Finally, resilience is not a one-shot deal. Each day that we practice our adaptability or try new things, for example, we are building our resilience muscle. Like any muscle, if we do not use it, we will lose it. So here are a few reflections for you to ponder this week. What story might you have about people that are different than you? I would love for you to write down some of the ways in which you might be willing to challenge old beliefs or assumptions in the future. And the challenge for you over the next week, should you accept it, is to say hello to three strangers that look different than you. If the circumstances allow, take the time to connect in a meaningful way. Ask how their day is going, and perhaps take the chance to learn about them. Drawing on a quote from Alfred Adler, I wanted to share this from Sarah's conversation today. Empathy is seeing with the eyes of another, listening with the ears of another, and feeling the heart of another. I would love to hear from you. Go to my website, aresilienceproject.com, and let me know how all of this goes. I'd love to know what you have discovered. Thank you for listening to this episode of A Resilience Project. We would not be doing this podcast without you. If you or someone you know has an inspirational story or is helping to build resilience in their community, please email me at cindy@aresilienceproject.com. In fact, email me either way. I would love to hear from you. My hope is to feature an episode periodically on your letters of resilience. I'm very interested in hearing your story of how you have tackled hard things and what worked for you. With your permission, I hope to share some of these stories along the way with our listeners. Also, check out my website, aresilienceproject.com, to learn more about our amazing guests. Your presence here is important because together we are cultivating a village of resilient individuals. You are creating a space for their stories to be shared and a sacred space for learning to occur. I also have a favor. I would love for you to go to your preferred podcast platform, rate and review the podcast so that we will know how we're doing. I also would like to express my gratitude to the amazing team of volunteers that have jumped on board to support this project. You will find each of those beautiful people on my website on the team page. As you go about this week, I invite you to think about one way that you can continue to grow your resilient muscle. What is one thing you can start with today? See you next week.